Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Hello, women of strength. How are you today? I hope you are doing amazing. We have our friend Ashley with us today, and you guys, she is from Australia. It has been so kind of crazy. I don't know why. I cannot understand time. We were talking about how we had to like literally Google, like, what time in Australia will it be if it's this time in Utah? It was just such a challenge to get this scheduled, but I'm so grateful for Ashley for taking the time out of her morning, her Monday morning, recording with us today. So welcome, Ashley. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. Like I was saying to you before, is, you know, the VBAC link was such invaluable to me with all the research and the statistics and just trying to hear other people's stories to help me, you know, change my mindset to get through it. So I'm really excited to add to that with my story as well.
Me too. And your story is got a little extra tidbit to it. Something that we know happens because, well, we've got lots of stories on them as well. Yes. But we actually haven't had one for a few minutes, and yours is a special scar. So you had an inverted T with an extension. Do you want to kind of share with our listeners exactly what that means? Because we've had some J scars. There's all different special scars, right? So an extension we know goes past the original cut, the incision. But yeah, tell us about T.
Yeah, so I actually only found out after the surgery that it was an inverted T, but I didn't really know what that entailed. So I had to do a bit of my own research, especially when I fell pregnant the second time, to know what was involved with that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was really scary, you know, just to see that I had a vertical cut in the middle. So obviously you've got your normal horizontal cut.
Low transverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And then through the center going vertically, I had a 3 centimeter cut, which was obviously riskier. A lot of providers said no to me when I started to look into, when I was pregnant the second time and starting to have a look into getting somebody to take me on. Even the public hospital that I had originally gone to with my son, they actually said no, like, you know, you will have to have a cesarean if you come through us. And you know, in Australia, they can't really say no to you if in a public hospital if that's what your wishes are. But we, you know, I kind of wanted somebody who was going to be supportive of me about the whole journey. So yeah, so that's where I come to going private instead and having an operation this time, which I know is quite rare with VBACs that you find a lot of people won't take you on. I had a really amazing experience. If anyone's listening from Sydney, I'm in Liverpool and my provider was Brian Hollis, and he is, you know, extremely VBAC friendly. He was amazing. And he had actually had somebody with an inverted T before.
Really? Okay. So he'd also seen one, which is definitely, like, there's so many providers out there that even do support VBAC, and then they have a special scar patient come in and they're like, I really like VBAC, but I don't know. I've never seen this before, but we know it exists. So I can't wait for you to share more in your story and about him, maybe, because we know people, it's so hard. It's so hard to find these providers. It's hard enough to just find a VBAC supportive provider in general. And then, you know, that's something unique that Australia does that maybe, not at least here in Utah, we don't do, like, the private, public. Like, we just have this hospital, and then we have the birth centers, and then we have the home births, right? So there's not, like, the dramatic difference in the hospital system, like, in your guys' case. So Okay. Oh my gosh. So excited to dive in. I do have a review of the week. I'm like so excited that I'm talking so fast. I do have a review of the week, and then we'll get into those stories. And I also, you said you didn't find out till after. Like that's so many times the case. Like they don't even say during or, and we'll
Not
go into this as well if they went into why, but sometimes there's not even a clear answer to, okay, I now have this different, unique scar, but why? So we're gonna get into that. Okay, so we have this review from XXOOXX, and it says informative, supportive, and empowering. It says after having a C-section that I certainly did not want and that I did not know was not necessary, I knew nothing about VBACs. I dove headfirst into this podcast, and on top of learning so much, I became informed and empowered to get my VBAC, which I got. Thank you, Julie and Megan, for loving your listeners and pouring your knowledge and support into us. What you do matters, and I will always recommend the VBAC link. Well, thank you, XXOOXX, for that amazing review. Congratulations on your VBAC. And I couldn't agree more. This podcast really is so empowering and so informative, like you were even just saying. And I think a lot of it even comes just from the listener, like from the storytellers and the mom and the women of strength. Like this, it's just so amazing. So I definitely su suggest sharing this podcast to anyone, not even if they're not a VBAC mom, if they're a first time or a second time mom, I also suggest that because I truly believe that these stories on this podcast will help people avoid a cesarean in general.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, cute Ashley. So you found out after. So how did this first birth lead up to this inverted T with an extension?
I guess my story starts in 2020. I had a low risk pregnancy, and other than being sick the whole time, but giving birth in March 2021 with my son. And it was super traumatic. It took a long time to heal physically and mentally from it. But my waters broke on their own 2 days before my due date. I had gone into the public hospital I was booked in for. I had seen the same midwife the whole pregnancy, which was really fantastic. Midwives, amazing and just empowering and, telling you, first time mum, you can do this, blah, blah, blah. And I had no signs and anything would be wrong. So, as usual, went back home and then the contractions started that night. And they started to really ramp up and become heavier. And so that night, about midnight or so, tried to get some sleep. I wanted to stay home as long as possible. 3:30 a.m., had to go to the hospital. I was just beyond. The pain in my back was just, and I didn't know if this was normal. But in the end, when I got to the hospital, I was only 3 centimeters dilated. So I had used the gas and the TENS to get through the contractions, but he was posterior, which I was nervous about. I didn't know as many things as I knew in the second pregnancy in terms of like spinning babies and trying to get into good positioning, that kind of thing. But the first, yeah, with my son, I don't know how it happened, but he was posterior and the pain was just unbearable.
And it happens. Like we've learned through pelvic dynamic courses and everything, like sometimes really truly babies actually have to enter in a posterior position before they get into an anterior position, and sometimes that means back labor. And it is very, very intense. It really is intense.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, so at this point, it went on for a few hours and I just actually couldn't deal with it anymore. So I had the epidural, which turned out to be, you know, quite a good thing for me. It was relieving, you know, of some of that back pain, but I still had felt a lot of it through it. So it's almost like it didn't seem to work as much as I thought it would at that point. And the contractions through my back were still there. And so we tried to do some things before I had the epidural to get into a better position, but it just, yeah, it wasn't working for me. So every contraction, my son's heart rate would drop. Mm-hmm. And the midwife was really good in just letting me, let's just keep going. Let's see. But as soon as the doctor on call, you know, knew that it had been quite a few hours, came in to check me. You've got meconium in your waters, you know, you have to have a cesarean. And I was just, you know, devastated because I had really thought that this was just going to be a great empowering birth.
Yeah.
You know, I was so excited to give birth and to hear that it wasn't going to go the way that I had intended. I was, you know, devastated and crying and, but yeah, he was in a compound position as well. So he did have his hand up past his head. And so there was a few things going against me in that time. But, you know, despite all of this, they get like gave me a little bit more time to keep going. And I did get to 9 centimeters. So I was in, you know, a position where they thought, okay, could my midwife was pushing for no, let's try and see if she can continue and maybe we can do some, you know, repositioning to get him out. But the doctor was no, cesarean. There's meconium in the waters. That's it, you know. And I was so exhausted. It had been like 34 hours from the time my waters broke. And I just gave in, you know, and I was in that vulnerable position of just so much pain and didn't know any better. And I just said, okay, you know, I'll give in and I'll have the cesarean. So, you know, during the cesarean, they're preparing. I heard the surgeon say to her assistant, she's 9 centimeters and explaining it. And the assistant said, should we just see, like, the head is almost there, like what, you know? And there was a little bit of whispering and then it all just stopped. And I was just laying there terrified, you know, like what's going on? They're talking about how far I've progressed and that they're concerned about having this cesarean. But yeah,
the baby was so low.
Yes, so low. And I found out, you know, later on that he was so low that they had to push him back up in the cesarean. And
did they push him up vaginally?
Yes.
Yeah. They do sometimes do that. Or they go in vaginally and one doctor's pulling from one end and one doctor's pushing from the other end vaginally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously the recovery is like you gave
Not,
birth,
really, yeah.
isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the doctor panicked, and I mean, I was in such a blur that my husband and I actually debriefed afterwards, and he said, "I've never been so terrified." You know, a team of doctors just flew in. She was making calls. Obviously, when she started to begin the cesarean, she saw that she couldn't grab him. He was too low, and that's why they had to cut vertically. But nothing was explained to us. You know, we were just lying there terrified. The tarp was up and we had
They're
no
doing
idea.
Doing their thing.
Yeah, just, you know, and first child, like we didn't know what to expect anyway. But my husband just said there was all these people that just flew in and it was all these conversations and whispers. And yeah, so then not long later, he emerged and the tarp wasn't lowered and he wasn't breathing. So he started breathing once they transferred him to Resus, but you know, that time was the longest time
absolutely.
In the whole world, you know.
2 minutes and feels like 5 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't even know how was long it was, but it felt like forever. And by the time that they placed him on me, you know, for the standard amount of time, I suppose, I was in just a shock. You know, the spinal block had made me have the shakes and it was just not what I was hoping
anticipated.
Yeah. And You know, they wheeled him away with my husband. They went, and then I was to go separate into recovery. So before I did that, the doctor then lowered the tarp and said to me, "You will never have a vaginal birth. I've only had to do what I just did twice in my career."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and just so brutal, and just the shock of that was like, well, I didn't want this either, you know, and it was just really hard to hear because I just had this baby, not how I had anticipated, and to hear that for the future, yeah, it was a big shock to me. So going into recovery, and then later on, that initial bond with my son, I was just in so much pain that it
Yeah.
was hard to hold him, and it really took a long time to recover from it. The next day, she did come and talk to me, and she said she had to cut an extension and cut an inverted T incision of 3 centimeters to get him out. And she said, "Yeah, she's so I'm so lucky it wasn't worse."
Wow.
Yeah, and then she left, and then I just had to go home and start my new life as a mum with just this recovery. I could hardly walk, as a cesarean already is painful, but I had all this pain, and I just it wasn't it left me with just a awful feeling mentally as well, and I just obviously adored my son. I was so happy to be a mum, but that lead up, and then just bang, that's how you're giving birth. It was just a shock. So that's what happened, and the details of it I found out with the second pregnancy. I didn't know afterwards. That was our only conversation we had. I didn't get any discharge notes with that information. It wasn't until I was pregnant the second time that I requested my hospital notes
Yeah,
and
so
found out.
important. So important to do. I really encourage anybody to, whether or not one, two, different hospitals, all the things, like request your records because you really do learn a lot about what really transpired that day in, your op reports.
Yeah, definitely.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Yeah, so I guess that brings me to now with
Yeah.
pregnancy. So a lot better, a lot happier result. But I fell pregnant in May 2023. Both my pregnancies were normal, low risk, a little sick, and I actually got quite dizzy and things like that, but nothing that was going to impact me from giving the VBAC a try. So like I mentioned, I had gone to a few different providers and had, when I had my pelvic floor checks and things after my first son, I spoke to the doctors there and said, "Would it be possible to have a VBAC here?" And they said no, and that was something that was a big shock to me. I didn't expect that I was going to have to look for somebody, and yeah, so I guess that was a big shock. And so I found out through some of my friends about this OB that was quite VBAC supportive, and I knew I wanted to give it a try. And ultimately, if I did have to have the cesarean, I would be okay with it, but I just wanted to try, So I heard about this OB and had an appointment with him. And my husband and I, like after the initial appointment, we were just instantly comfortable with him. He was so supportive. He said to me, "Ashley, is this what you want to do?" And I said, "Yeah, I really would like to try." And he goes, "Well, that's what we're going to do."
Oh, I
And
love that.
yeah, and I was just like, "Oh my goodness, he's so just honest about this is how it's going to be. If you want to give it a go, these will be my conditions, which were to have monitoring, which I was fine with. You know, I was still a little bit nervous, and I know some people would rather have no monitoring and just let your body tell you, you know, but I just, with the special scar, I thought if there's any signs of rupture, I really want to know.
Well, and that's actually a very common request from a provider in a VBAC situation. They usually want continuous monitoring, and you can fight for not to have continuous monitoring, but that's a very normal request. So on top of VBAC having a special scar, it's even more of a normal request for a provider to say, yeah, let's totally do this. I just want to monitor things, because we do know that one of the signs of uterine rupture is fetal distress.
Yeah, that's right. And he, you know, he was just really supportive about, you know, let's put a birth plan together and see what you want to do. And I'll see what is the best thing to do. And during the pregnancy, I tried to do as much, you know, listening to podcasts. That's how I came across your page and, you know, Instagram, just constantly looking for information. Mm-hmm. It's actually a beautiful Facebook group called Special Scars, mm-hmm. Special Hope.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, being in Australia, I was just like, this is global. And there was so many amazing women on there that were offering support, advice, you know, and even information was on there, statistics. And yeah, I did a little bit of research, but I didn't want to overwhelm myself. I just wanted to have a really strong mindset. There was times of doubt and, you know, oh, maybe I'll just book the cesarean, like, you know, but then I thought, no, this is what I want. Let's give it a try. And my OB was really supportive from the beginning about, let's just see how we go, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he retrieved my notes and he found out that, you know, all of those details that they had to push him back up vaginally and they had to do this extension cut and all those kind of things. So, you know, it was good that he was prepared, he knew, and I just tried to stay as active as I could, like through the pregnancy. I did the dates at the end. I did the raspberry leaf tea and the vitamins. And, you know, I just was always on the ball. I tried to do as much as I could to prepare myself physically. But yeah, so the conditions with my OB was that we said I would be giving birth at the public hospital that's next to the private, a different one to before, because of any emergencies, that kind of thing. And he would have to do some examinations every hour or so, which I was also fine about. So we, obviously I couldn't use water. That was one thing I really wanted. I wanted to try and be able to get
birth in the water.
Yeah, yeah. Or even just use it labor. As a management.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said no because of the monitoring. So that was one thing I was about. But I thought when I do go into labor and it starts, I will try and use water at home before I get to the hospital. So, yeah, my husband was so supportive of me and said, you know, I will help you. Let's do this. Like, if you want to use the water, just, he was a little bit nervous about, okay, when they start to ramp up, we really need to leave because the hospital was about 30 minutes away. And we just wanted to be at a point that no later than 5 minutes or so apart. And they wanted me.
Well, and you had already made it to 9 centimeters before. So even though first you'd be a first time mom pushing a baby out vaginally, your cervix is not as much like a first time mom.
Exactly right. And that was something that got me through the whole labor. Like I just kept saying to myself, my body knows how to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I've gotten here before. I know what to do, you know, and that was just something, any times of doubt, I would just keep saying it. But yeah, so he just, my OB said at any point that he was concerned, we'd have the discussion. And if anything was to go wrong, we would be calling a C-section straight away. And I was fine about. So, you know, I came in at 39 weeks and I booked at 39 weeks for a stretch and sweep, but I got COVID. So my whole family, we all got COVID and I was just, no, like I couldn't hardly breathe, like, you know, congested everything. I am not going into labor like this. I've done that much preparation. So we just, yeah, I just tried to rest and get better. So then it was put out to 40 weeks. I had until 41 weeks. And then he said we would be having a discussion about a cesarean. He didn't want me to go too long with the scar. So 40 weeks, my due date. I came in for a stretch and sweep and I went home to relax after. Nothing at all happened. No pain, nothing. 2 days later, I started to have like some mild period pains, carried on the day with my son, just, kept going. But I had been attending acupuncture weekly from 36 weeks. So I had another session at 6:30 that night, and by 9:30 the pain really started to ramp up. So I decided to try and sleep, but by the time I had a shower, laid down in bed at 10 o'clock, they were coming faster, stronger, and I knew I wanted to stay home as long as possible. So got into the shower, then I did some type of positioning that I could get, comfortable with the TENS machine on, but I knew the pain of the back pain, and I just knew that this baby has to be posterior again because the feeling was just, it's like I had just experienced it yesterday.
Deja vu.
Yeah, and I just said to my husband, she's posterior. I just know it, So we left for the hospital at 1:30 in the morning. We got there and I had to walk a really long distance from the car to the birthing unit. It was just so odd. There was no one there, no wheelchairs for me, like just no one. And yeah, I was so shocked. I was like, what's going on, But I just said, this is going to help me progress. Like any little obstacle that would come up, I said, I'm going to be able to do this. So helping, I think, in the end, actually helped my labor progress because by the
I
time,
was thinking that. Like, this is actually probably really good. That's a lot of movement for the pelvis and good for the baby to rotate.
Oh, and I was just having these contractions that I had to get on the floor to breathe them out and just rock through them, But it took us a long time to get from the car to the birthing unit because I had to keep on stopping. But when I did get there, they were like, wow, you're almost 5 centimeters. Like you have progressed
What you
really
wanted.
quickly. Yeah. And I just, the contractions then just started. They were so weird. It was like I had to push, but it was too early to push. But she was posterior, it was confirmed. So that pressure, yeah, it was just such an odd labor. I didn't have that at all, even though I was posterior with my son too. This one was like intense pushing feeling that I couldn't control. And then, yeah, so once I, had discovered that she was posterior too, I just tried to get into some good positionings. I had done a lot of research about posterior because I was terrified of it happening again. Got on the ball, just trying to rock back and forth. And my husband was such a great support because we had done a little bit of information, like reading about this pressure point on the back, lower back.
Sacrum.
Yes, yeah, that's it. So anytime I had these contractions, he would just push on there, and I swear by that. I have
Oh,
to
yeah.
say, more than the TENS machine, more than anything, that got me through that labor. But yeah, that was, I at one stage I sat on the toilet to try and help with the pressure of this pushing, and my waters broke. And that was the that really ramped up from there. So I was 6 centimeters at that point, and unbearable. I couldn't take it anymore. And I asked for the epidural. And the midwife was like, are you sure you want to do that? You said you didn't want to. And I just knew that I had to do it. I couldn't take it any longer. And I was at that point where I was like almost asking, just wheel me in. I'll just have the cesarean, and I didn't want that. I wanted to keep trying. So I had the epidural and I fell asleep. It was just like my body needed that.
Yeah. Rest
And
and relaxation can really be the best tool in labor, even in early labor. We're so excited, we just want to keep going, but rest and
yeah,
relaxation.
was so tired. Yeah, and I just relaxed. My body completely relaxed, and I fell asleep for about an hour. And at that point, my OB came in to see me and measured me and discovered that baby had turned while I was sleeping.
Yay.
And I was 10 centimeters. So in that hour, I had progressed that quickly. And he looked at me and he said, Ashley, you're having your VBAC. And he said, you're going to push this baby out within, you know, half an hour or so, this baby will be here. And I just was in pure, like I've got the feeling all over again. I was just so, you know, pure disbelief. I was just so happy, you know, and I just said to my husband, like, we've done it. Like, this is it. You know, this is the moment that I really wanted. Yeah, it's making me emotional all over again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I pushed for about 20 minutes under his guidance. I still had feeling and control in my legs because I didn't have the epidural at full dose. So that really helped. Yeah. And, you know, within 20 minutes, my baby girl was born. And just that feeling, you know, pure joy, pure connection, you know, that bond was just immediate. Pride, shock. It was just
all of it.
Yeah. And when they laid her on my chest, I'll just never forget looking up at my husband, you know, the pride he had in me. Yeah, it was just beautiful, you know, and it was just truly empowering. Mm-hmm. And it was, yeah, it was a beautiful moment. And it's just something you never forget, you know. She's 12 weeks now and I just relive that moment over and over. But, yeah, it was my healing birth, you know, and it's just, yeah, it was beautiful. It was everything that I had hoped for. Just shock, really, because it was just such a different experience to the emergency that I had with my son. And, you know, within I had that golden hour. He wasn't taken away from me. She wasn't taken away from me like my son was, you know. They gave me that time with her and, yeah, it was just pure disbelief, like in a beautiful way. Yeah, so that's it. Like I recovered so much quicker, you know, and I think for me, like that chapter of my life closed. It was just a beautiful way to really celebrate what birthing should be like, you know, mm-hmm. and how a mother should feel afterwards, you know, that bond that you should have. Yeah, so that's me.
Oh, I felt all the emotions as you were sharing it. And I know that I get an extra advantage because I can see your face and I can see you get teary and I can see it in your face, you know. But that moment is amazing when you realize you've done it. And it is so overwhelming in all the ways. But holy cow, I'm so happy for you. I'm so glad that you were able to find the support because I mean, it's just so hard. It's so hard. And you were even told, like, you know, you hadn't even met your baby yet, really. And we're told, just to let you know, you will never have a baby vaginally again.
Like,
to even be told that in that space, it's that in itself is so overwhelming. And being told, like, no one here is going to support you. No one. You know, when you were proof, along with so many other women of strength who have had special scars and gone on to have a vaginal birth, right? That it is possible and you do not have to. But when you're in that vulnerable state, you know, I can just picture my own C-sections in an OR with the drape up and the bright lights and the beepings. And if, you know, I were told that I would never have a baby vaginal again, I'm already in that emotional intimate space and vulnerable mm-hmm. where I would have been, I could have, and many people could be like, okay, and then just never look past it, like that, you know, and just that was it, okay, I'll never deliver vaginally, you know. But that's where I think this podcast just is so important for people to listen and hear these stories, that you may be told something. And that may be true. That really may be the best choice in the future, right? Yeah. But, and it may be medically best or emotionally best. But that doesn't mean it's always exactly what your fate has to be for the rest of your life. Absolutely. Of having a baby.
Yeah. And when I was told that, you know, and then I fell pregnant, I thought to myself, okay, if that is what is medically necessary, I will do that. I just want my baby here naturally, you know, safely. And if it isn't the way that I had hoped, then that's okay. You know, at one point I even looked at, you know, the maternal assisted cesarean, and I had that discussion with my OB, and he said, yeah, Ashley, if you decide you're going to have the cesarean elective, I'll do that for you. You know, he's like, I will make it beautiful for you. You won't, you know, I can play music you like, you know, I'll do whatever you like. It will be different from the first. And I said to myself, okay, that is an option. You know, if I just feel
that's
that
a good plan B.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And he said, if we call it early enough, you know, that there's no signs of rupturing, I can still do that for you. So I just felt really comfortable going in that no matter what, this would hopefully be a better experience than what I had. But yeah, you're right. Like, you know, there is this, there's almost like this stigma that, you know, C-sections, especially special scars, you know, that like your body failed. And, you know, I wanted to break the mold on that, that bodies aren't broken. You know, I almost left my son, like my first baby, coming home with him, and I just looked at him and loved him and adored him. But I also felt to myself like, you know, that's not how I wanted to bond with you, you know, by laying here and I can't move. And, you know, I felt like my body was broken or it had let me down. And this time round, I just believed in myself. I believed in my body, you know, and I said to myself, your mindset is everything. Going in, the mindset is how I'm going to birth this baby to get me through it. So yeah, you know, it's birthing is incredible, and I feel like we should feel incredible, you know, afterwards.
Absolutely. I mean, birth is incredible, and it really is incredible no matter what, but the experience really does matter. You know, we talk about the whole, we hear, I should say, the whole safe mom, safe baby, but of course, duh, but that experience really, really counts, and it sticks with us really for the rest of our life. I mean, my oldest is going to be 13 in just a few months, and I still remember her birth. And then my other is 10, and I remember her birth. And of course, my VBAC baby, I remember his birth. And those are sticking with me. They're sticking with me. And, you know, it's just to have, I love that your provider was like, listen, I'm going to support here. And if it goes here, I'm still going to support you. And we're, no matter what, we are going to make this a better experience for you. Like, I love that that provider saw the better experience as an important part. Right?
Yes. Right. Yeah. You know, I'm paying for his expertise. Yes. Right. But I almost felt like he just wanted me to be happy. And it was beyond that. You know, for him, it was like, I can see your pain. I want you to be happy this time around. You know, we felt that from the initial appointment. It was more than just like, I'm paying for you. You have to do what I've asked. You know, he was like, help me get a better experience for you. What do you want? What can I do? You know, and that, that was so important to me. So yeah, it was wonderful. It was really important to me to acknowledge him as well, because he was such an amazing support.
Yes. Oh, I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for you. And I do want to just mention that group again, you guys, Special Scars, Special Hope on Facebook.
Yeah.
What kind of things did you see in your experience in that group?
You know, it's just hearing other people's stories, because you see VBACs, you know, and I was like, yeah, 100%, you know, yep, I need to do this and do that. But it's got that little bit of fear factor with it, because it is a special scar and not that many people attempt it. So to have a group of women global, you know, that do attempt it, and just empowering each other, like, hey, you know, I had an amazing experience. This is what I did. That was just invaluable to me, you know, taking on all this advice. You know, quite a lot of these women are in the US, and they do talk about how providers can either be for you or against you and just ride you off completely. And it is similar here too. You know, there was quite a few that said, no way. No, you know, they don't want that liability. So yeah, it was just really great to have that group with such amazing, brave women that are going out there and sharing their story on there, because it helps people like me that were like, oh, look, it can happen, you know, and it's rare, but it's not impossible. So that was, yeah, that group is amazing. And I encourage anybody that's had, you know, there's all these different types of scars on there, not just inverted T. There's people that have had inverted J's and, you know, just extensions. And so anything a little bit special.
Yes. Well, and I was going to go over the C-section incision types. So we've got the low transverse, right, which is considered the safest way to VBAC, having a low, just boring low transverse. But then we have low vertical, which means they cut lower in the abdominal segment and it's vertical up and down. And then we have classical, which is higher. And sometimes we have classical scars when maybe a baby is very preterm, very small, and needed to come out that way. Multiples, or maybe if a baby's transverse, but it's earlier on or something like that, they may have to go higher. Then there's inverted T, and like you said, inverted J's. And then we have extensions on all of these. So there's been even low transverse with an extension where it can kind of go further, or that's where it goes into that J, right? And yeah, there's just so many different types. And honestly, the statistics are not that like powerful out there. Like there's not a ton, and there's not, I don't know, I would say concrete. There's not a ton of like really solid concrete. There are some, but they're like smaller. They're like,
yeah, it's really hard. Like I didn't want to overwhelm myself with statistics and things. A lot of people in that group, you know, they share the rupture risks and the statistics on, and what they throw at you, these OBs, like, you know, most of them, oh, you've got a 20% risk of rupturing. You know, that would turn anybody away. Yeah. And I just knew just from women in this group that I had just glanced over seeing it's not that high. Like, don't let anyone tell you it's that high. Obviously, you know, there's situations that you need to have the cesarean because it is unsafe. But in my case, I knew that it wasn't a 20% rupture risk. I knew that there was definitely less, and mine was 3 centimeters. It can be bigger than that, obviously. But when I had spoken to my OB, he said, you know, it is 3 centimeters, but in the span of your whole labor progressing, 3 centimeters is not a big
deal.
Yeah, it's pretty small. And so even just hearing that, I was like, wow, you know, you're telling me something different to all these other people. So yeah, it was, it's good to just know a little bit to back yourself up in conversations and just have that little bit of research behind you.
Yes. And we are also going to have a whole bunch of links here in the show notes. So if you guys want to check that out, I highly suggest it. Go check out the show notes. We're also going to have the link to that group because I anytime anybody has a special scar, I'm like, this is a group. It's so empowering in there. It's so informative. It's just amazing. And there's not many groups like that, or there's specialscars.org as well. So,
but
yeah.
Even, you know, for people that have had a rupture as well, that group is, you know, just a safe space to
it
talk
is.
About how you're feeling. And, you know, there's a lot of women on there that are, you know, become friends really just in sharing their experience. So yeah, it's a really informative, great group.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for taking the time out and figuring out the times changes and being here with us just 12 weeks after your VBAC.
Thank you. And thank you for everything you do to help empower women. Like, obviously it's reaching globally, you know, and it's just so informative and supportive, and yeah, it's amazing. So thank you for everything you do.
Absolutely.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.